Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Corey and Shad here, joined by Craig Hemke, founder and editor of TFMetalsReport.com. Now, Craig, we talk every Thursday. Last Thursday, we were talking about the upcoming jobs data and how that will filter into Fed expectations, the potential market reaction. Well, that was completely overshadowed by the banking collapses in the U.S., Silicon Valley Bank, as well as a couple other banks that went down due to bad investments. But the government, the Fed, stepped in quickly, shored up some cash to make depositors whole. And the market, while it did drop at the tail end of last week and at the beginning of this week, it's interesting to see, at least as we're chatting right now, fear dissipating from investors' minds as the S&P is up a little over 2% so far this week, a lot on the back of the moves today. Craig, your takeaway from what seemed like a pretty significant news story of banks collapsing, but the market not seeming to be overly worried about it. There wasn't just a kind of waterfall decline that some people were expecting after bank collapses.
That may still be coming, because I don't think this is just a one-off. But for now, you're absolutely right. The greatest fear in the stock market is fear of missing out, FOMO. And so every dip gets bought because people think, well, you know, every additional bit of bad news means we're that much closer to the Fed, you know, turning the printer on again, and all that cash is going to come flowing in again, just like it did in 2020. And they're really probably not wrong, right? You guys probably remember there were books written back 10 years ago on this concept of the crack-up boom, right? Where basically in the end times, they're just printing as much cash as they can to Band-Aid over all the problems, and everything goes up. I mean, everything, not just precious metals, stocks, bonds, art, real estate, commodities. I mean, you name it. So there's probably something to that as well. I don't know. This is not a one-off. I mean, they've been able to, you know, look what they've been able to do. Okay, well, let's see. The Silicon Valley Bank and the other one, Signature, will just make it kind of special so that they, you know, everybody can be made whole regardless of the FDIC limits. And then, okay, Credit Suisse, we'll put a Band-Aid on that one by having the Swiss National Bank give them 50 billion francs. And then, this other one that there was New Republic or First Republic, why don't we, let's see here, we'll get some banks to kind of put them back together and buy them. And it's kind of reminiscent of March of 2008, you know, with Bear Stearns. As long as it's a one-off, everything's fine. But the problem is Bear Stearns wasn't one-off. There was a systemic issue, you know, of these mortgage-backed securities that were actually garbage. And unless the Fed, you know, somehow figures out a way to get bond prices to rally, this is a systemic problem too. And so you can, you know, put a Band-Aid on one and paper over the other. But if there's 10, 50, you know, 20, 50, whatever more like this, you can only do that for so long. At the end of the day, I think, and this is, again, what drives that stock market strength. The Fed odds of future rate hikes has fallen dramatically. As of yesterday, Fed funds futures were pricing in as much as 100 basis points of cuts before the end of the year. And, you know, your forward-looking markets anticipate that.
Yeah, Greg, it's really interesting how quickly that shifted as far as the expected hikes to continue higher for longer to then possibly the notion of cuts coming in, which we had mentioned was very similar to 2019 and 2010 as far as those same kind of patterns. But one of the things on this bank that's interesting is it's not been a one-off. As you pointed out, it wasn't just SVB, Silicon Valley Bank. It was Signature Bank. It was also Silvergate, which was mostly a crypto bank that went up in flames. It was also Credit Suisse. So what's interesting is the Fed has come up with this BTFP, the Bank Term Funding Program, where they're going to inject up to $2 trillion into banking. So basically, people won't do bank runs and they can backstop the liquidity that that bank needs. Isn't that them just inserting themselves once again into these supposedly free markets and then basically taking businesses that are poorly run and poorly risk management, and they're injecting capital into companies that really should go under?
Yes, it loosely, I guess, reminds me of the TARP program from the financial crisis, you know, where, you know, that was the first and the first attempt at QE, you know, that I and a lot of other people thought, wow, this is going to be horribly inflationary. And it really didn't happen. The inflation didn't happen until we got to COVID, where they're actually, you know, handing money out to people. That first QE program, and really even the second one, a lot of that, those dollars were quarantined, to use a recent vernacular, in that what the Fed was doing was buying crap from their banks, the big, you know, investment houses and the like, you know, mortgage-backed securities and things like that that were worth pennies on the dollar. And the Fed was, you know, paying them full price for those and shoring up their balance sheets that way. This program kind of strikes me as the same, because as I read it, what the Fed is doing is saying, okay, you know, you've got some 10-year notes that you bought in 2021 that are worth 80 cents on the dollar. Now, you know, they changed the FASB accounting rules back in 2009 to let you carry those at maturity, not mark them to market. And so by carrying them at maturity, you gave all these banks gave a false picture of solvency. You know, that when the bond, you know, their assets are actually at 80% of what they're telling you, all of a sudden you've got more liabilities than assets and you're insolvent. So what the Fed is saying, look, okay, hey, look, let's have a swap line. You can give us your 10-year notes at 80 cents on the dollar, and we'll give you back full price, and then we'll hold these things to maturity for you. But at least you get the cash back at full price. Again, that kind of, to me, if I'm understanding it right, that hints at those original QE programs and TARP, which, again, that was all a desperate attempt to try to paper over a problem. And all it led to was, you know, taking the Fed from a $1 trillion balance sheet to a $9 trillion balance sheet eventually. And I suspect this is more of the same. Does it give them some leeway maybe to keep hiking rates now that they have this program? That would be a thing that probably needs to be thought of, you know. Well, hell, now, you know, gosh, we can keep driving rates higher because we'll just, you know, now this program's in place, we'll just keep buying all these treasuries off the bank's books as they get worse and worse, and we'll hold them. Anyway, in the end, it's all just, I mean, this isn't capitalism. This isn't the free market system that we've all known. We're now into kind of a kleptocracy socialist system almost. And this is just another program designed to keep the plate spinning.
So we did actually see the ECB go ahead with a rate hike today that had some people questioning if they would do it after the issues that the Credit Suisse went through. But Craig, if this is just the start, truly, of more collapses, more issues for this underlying system, what are you looking for next? What is the market discounting? What is on your radar that confirms, look, the system is not healthy even after this program?
You know, this gets back to, and we've talked about this before, guys, and I remember even telling you, like in the interviews I did after I put out my forecast this year back in January, I said, I hate to use this word, because I just know everybody that's held precious metals for the last 12 years hears it and goes, oh, come on, I've been patient for 12 years. But I mean, for me, what's going on right now just simply confirms my general longer term thesis for this year and next, which is, I mean, the Fed is going to have to make a choice. And they can either continue to hike and then just risk destroying everything in doing so, or they got to turn around like they did in 2010 and 2015, 16 and 2019 and start cutting. And with an election year coming next year, I mean, I think that even more seals the deal. So I'm just, you know, I'm not finding myself getting upset and frustrated, you know, at little pullbacks or on any certain day where the mining shares should be doing better than they are. Because I just, for me, this just, these most recent events just, you know, crystallize the idea of, I mean, I feel even more confident that I'm seeing this correctly, where this is all headed in the months to come.
Well, Craig, it almost seems like the market woke up to that a little bit too, because bonds started getting a bid because people realized, hey, this is looking pretty dicey. Maybe I will put them a little more safe haven on. The yen got a bid and gold and silver did jump up. I mean, just remember a week or two ago, we were at 1818 gold and people and 1813, I think, and people were expecting it to drop down into the 1700s. We started hearing calls for, hey, it's going to go back and test the lows from last year. And in a week, gold has ratcheted up about $120 at one point. and silver tacked on 10%. So do you think that the general markets woke up to, hey, maybe everything's not rosy. Maybe we're not going to have a no landing or soft landing. Maybe this inverted yield curve is the harbinger of a recession. Maybe things are starting to break. Do you think that maybe the safe havens have come back into focus for investors?
Well, yes, and we should talk about the yield curve, but I do think we should mention what happened in the metals. I don't recall if we talked about this last week or not, but remember the four sharp short squeezes in the fourth quarter last year in both metals. Silver, though, in particular, four very quick, sharp short squeezes from about $18, maybe $18.25, all of them at least 10% in a matter of 4 or 5 days. And it was when the hedge fund, if you go by the COT reports, the hedge fund position got to be about 15 to 20,000 contracts net short, while the bank swap dealer position got 15 to 20,000 contracts net long. And then lo and behold, short squeeze. Remember we talked about that last fall several times, right? I remember, Shad, you talking about how it was the opposite of a bull market where you take the stair steps up and then the elevator down. This was like the stairs down and then an elevator up. Remember that?
Absolutely.
So anyway, no COT reports, at least up to date at present. We're slowly getting piecemeal now, look back as of a couple of weeks ago. And the exact same setup was happening. I figured this was happening. We were talking about this on my site. Because you'd see open interest growing while price was going down. And almost always has been my experience that that happens as the hedge funds are getting short. Open interest goes up when price goes down. Open interest goes up when price goes up when the hedge funds are getting long. So this is, I mean, again, didn't really need a COT report. The COT report only confirms that. What we don't have yet is the one from what was surveyed last Tuesday when Powell, the day that Powell was in front of the Senate Banking Committee, and he was railing about this, and gold went down $35, silver went down 94 cents, and both of them, silver's open interest went up like 5,000 contracts that day, gold's went up like 15,000. So it was a huge final rush of short interest from the hedge funds and speculators. Marked the low, didn't it? And now we've had these really sharp short squeezes. Like you said, gold from the bottom to the peak yesterday was about $120. It's pretty close to what it did multiple times last year. Silver from 2050 to, I'm sorry, it was even lower than that. What, at 1950 to whatever it had gotten to, 2250? That's 15%. Anyway, so long answer. But what we've seen so far is just simply a short squeeze. We've not even, for the metals, we've not even begun to see long interest come in. Silver's open interest is back to 9-year lows, like 121,000 contracts. What if, when this really gets rolling again now, and it's clear to everybody that the Fed is done and cutting and all these other things are going on, we start adding 60, 70,000 contracts of open interest on the long side as money flows back into silver, and we're going to get a pretty nice rally, but we're not there yet. That has not happening yet.
No, it isn't. You can just tell by the chart too, right? It was a nice bounce in these metals, but I guess you can argue it put in a higher low, but we haven't really taken out anything from earlier this year in terms of price levels. So this continues to be a pretty choppy chart for the metals, but for a lot of markets. Let's talk yield curve then, because there was a big change in the yield curve. The 10 to 2 year was the most inverted since the early 80s, still is inverted, but it snapped back quite a bit just last week on that banking news. Craig, what are you seeing in the yield curve outside of the fact of, look, whenever the yield curve gets inverted, a recession's coming, but we've heard a recession's coming for a year now.
Right. The difference between the 2-year note and the 10-year note in the U.S. Treasury market, when that gets inverted, where the 2-year note is yielding more than the 10-year, that historically, bats 1,000. Anybody, you can go to the St. Louis Fed research site, type in FRED, F-R-E-D, FRED charts on Google. It'll take you right there. Right on the main page, on the most popular series, they call it, is this 2 to 10 difference. And most of the time, it's positive because that's the way it should be, right? You should get more interest from a longer-term investment than a short-term because of inflation and all that kind of stuff. When it inverts, that thing bats 8 for 8 in forecasting a recession. Forecasting a recession. When do you know that it's finally getting started? Well, besides all the horrible economic data that we're currently getting, I mean, these regional Fed manufacturing indices are all just terrible. Besides that, how do you know it's starting? Well, you get fundamental news like bank runs and bank failures. That doesn't help. But let's get back to that yield curve. How do you know, you know, if it's signaling a recession is coming, how do you know we're on the doorstep of it? It's actually when that yield curve begins to uninvert and flatten back out. And again, you can see this on those Fed charts, that it's when it begins to move back up toward flat that you're entering the recession. Again, it's right there laid out going back 60 years. You can see it's 8 for 8, and that's when it happens. So last week, peak inversion, I'm certain, was last Tuesday or Wednesday when the yield on the 2-year note got to 5.10. Heck, the 6-month T-bill was north. It was like 5.25. But yet the 10-year note was 4.01. So you're almost 110 basis points inverted. At the bottom, so far yesterday, when everybody's worried about, you know, other banks and contagion and all that other kind of stuff, that inversion got to about 40, moving back from 110 inverted to only 40. That's that flattening. So here we are. Now we are headed down that path. If not already in recession, we're right on the doorstep. And then you put all this fundamental stuff on top of it, and it becomes almost kind of self-fulfilling.
Well, Craig, it's we're moving closer to the doorstep of a recession based on that yield curve starting to flatten. But it seems like everybody's still jumping from one economic news report to the next and having violent swings back and forth. To Corey's point, it's been a very choppy market in all markets, whether it's the cryptos, whether it's the precious metals, the commodities, the general stock markets, the bonds. Everything has been a bit of a roller coaster ride. Are there any economic data points coming up in the next week or two that you've got your eye on that you think could move the needle?
Well, we're sure as heck going to be watching the FOMC next week. On next Wednesday, the meeting will conclude and you'll get what I call the Fed lines, the statement. And okay, that'll move things 2 o'clock Eastern next Wednesday. But then the real fun is going to be when Jerry Powell starts to talk in his press conference. What he says, how he says it. Even more bad news next week and the Fed doesn't hike at all. I mean, we went from almost certain it was going to be a 50 basis point rate hike to now maybe they'll do 25. Maybe they do 25. And then, you know, Powell's like, but it might be now as far as we're going to go. I mean, that press conference, what he says and how he says it, is going to kind of clear the playing field a little bit and let you know if we are ready to, you know, have a significant, obvious to everyone, clear to see uptrend in the precious metals, or whether we're going to kind of sit around here and continue to bang out sideways. Again, you guys remember, I have felt that by summer, it would be clear just from an economic standpoint, the Fed couldn't go any further. And then on average, it's about 75 to 90 days from the last rate hike to the first rate cut historically. So I thought, you know, they'd be cutting by July, August, September. All of this suddenly means it could be sooner. As soon as we get that point, you know, that's when gold's going to be sustained to the upside. We just don't know if it'll start next week. So we'll watch that FOMC real closely. The rest of the economic data that is still to come later this month, durable goods, you know, the JOLTS jobs stuff, the core CPE or PCE and regular PCE, you know, all that stuff still to come. But for now, all eyes will be on Powell next Wednesday, and will certainly give us no shortage of stuff to talk about next Thursday.
Yeah, so true, Craig. All central bank meetings are important, but central bank meetings after banking collapses, you can argue, are even more important. I personally
doesn't
think everyone's getting a little too far over their skis saying there won't be a rate hike and the Fed won't be hiking even in the following meeting, but who knows? We're going to find out, hopefully, a lot more when we hear from Jerome Powell next week. Craig, thank you as always for chatting. No shortage of topics this week. Going to tie in perfectly with next week. So have a great weekend, Craig, and chat with you next Thursday.
Thanks, guys.